Welcome, one and all, across the Alpha Quadrant and beyond to Lower Decks, a Star Trek podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial Star Trek podcast. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hailing frequencies are open, Pete.
Oh, play me a concerto. Lower Decks, a Star Trek podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 202, Kayshan, His Eyes Open, comes to you now via Inorganic Matter Compactor.
News from last weekend's STLV, 55-year celebration in Las Vegas. Some of the news included some new Prodigy images, some predictably vague talk about the joys and challenges of the still filming Discovery Season 4, a little bit of talk there about its LED wall technology, and an appearance by Ken Mitchell, who spoke via computer, as unfortunately his ALS has progressed to a point where he can no longer speak.
Yeah, really bittersweet. I've heard that he is involved in Season 4 of Discovery. Obviously, the fact that he can no longer talk, the progression of that disease, terrible. And, you know, we need to find a cure for that, obviously. But really, really beloved performer, and can't wait to see what Season 4's contribution will be from Mr. Mitchell.
And certainly, Pete, news for Season 4 release date and so forth. It's been very, very quiet. To hear the actors talk a little bit about this thing of, you know, when you're done filming, you can't hang out on set. You have to go back to your trailer. Slower progress there in terms of you need to wait for the hair person to come through. Then there's some, a little bit of downtime, then the makeup person and so forth, just as they really try and keep things spaced and distanced and safe. I understand why they have not announced a date yet for Season 4 to start. However, I continue to look at that Star Trek Day date, September 8th, where there'll be assuredly some sort of event on StarTrek.com, Paramount Plus, and so forth. And I would be shocked if we don't get a date on that date.
Chad Rubel is the editor of Star Trek Discovery. If you're not following him on Twitter, you need to. And I know he was watching the first episode the other day, and not in an editorial capacity. So is it possible they split the season? They've done that before to make good on some kind of date. Let's not forget how pushed back Discovery was originally. We will get these episodes when we get these episodes. And the only thing I think is a sure bet that we won't go animation to animation, even though they're pegging Prodigy also for a 2021 release.
Well, speaking of animation, Pete, let's head now into our Ready Rundown.
Program complete. Enter when ready.
On the USS Cerritos, Mariner, Rutherford, and Tendi are off to the sonic showers, and Jet's there too. It's a co-ed affair, with naughty bits covered up by the sonic showerness. Mariner turns the shower up and up to get Jet out of Boimler's spot. Never felt more alive. Later, the captain notes the ship has come across a collector's starship. He's dead, and the contents need to be cataloged by the Cerritos crew. Chairman Siggy's on the line, and he'd like the crew to get rid of the exploding stuff, but keep all the rest. You know, keep it on the ship. The mission can be headed up by Lieutenant Kayshan, the new head of security. He's Temerian. Rapunky when he led the Seven. Mariner and company are joining the mission, and they sigh. Boimler would have loved this, but he's having fun on the Titan. On the Titan, it's another run-and-gun mission against a pack-led warship. Ah! Riker's crew notes the Packleds are trying to find Viruvium ore, though they must be working for someone. Riker is sending an away team to track the ore back to the Big Bads. Boimler and the other Titaners shuttle down, with the others dissing life on the D. The Enterprise D, that is. All those daycare centers and string quartets shiver. On the planet, Packleds have taken over, but the Titan crew is quote-unquote caught and now sneaking around, then really caught. They fall back to a tunnel, buying some time, but the Titan can't beam them up Distortion field. The away team is ready to go out in a blaze of phaser glory. Boldly go. No, no, says Boimler. Boldly going involves exploring and playing trombone and having transporter clones. Oh yeah, that reminds the Titaners that Starfleet is about more than kicking butt. And mention of the transporter clone gets Boimler thinking of an exit. He reverses the polarity of the drill, and three of the Titaners get beamed up. Boimler is trapped, then beamed up, amidst containment beam issues. They got him beamed up! Hooray, Boimler! Time for the Titan to leave, but the shuttle is en route to the ship, too. Its pilot is beamed up. Hooray, Boimler? Transporter clones. Boo. Sounds awfully familiar to Riker. He'd like to keep both Boimlers, but one needs to return to the Cerritos as an ensign. One steps forward and he'll go back. The other, he'll stay and go by William Boimler now. Earlier on the Cerritos, Kayshan's crew beams down, checking the room full of Easter eggs. The Armin Shimmerman Haven face jewel box? Awesome. Rutherford's unique with that implant. Here's my card, says Chairman Siggy. There's a passing reference to Kalis's helmet, and later the ship's automated defenses fire up. You will be part of the Collector's Collection. Kayshan gets zapped and is turned into an adorable puppet. The collector boxes drop down, blades are thrown, and I almost thought I saw Howard the Duck. The crew runs out of the storage room, with Siggy assuming it was the sticky fingered Orion who nabbed something. Mariner has a plan to shut off the ship, but Jet wants to simply get to escape pods via a more direct route. Meanwhile, Freeman monologues about how she's gotten negative notes from Starfleet about her micromanaging. She doesn't need to check in with the away team. Cut to the away team, firing phasers, under attack from robot arms, and a smashy crush-crush, aka inorganic matter compactor. They go into a bone room and, yes, it's a giant Spock skeleton or something, I think. Also revealed is that it was Siggy that stole, Kalis's sex helmet, setting off alarms. Siggy crosses a tripwire, and that gets the skeleton to drop on him. Mariner and Jet reflect on her motivations, and indeed his motivations, bravery versus death wish, and the two fight over philosophy. She likes to dive right in, and he likes to think things out. Maybe they both have a point. The solution is to put Rutherford and Tendi in charge, and they realize the Excalibur bones could turn acidic and let them into an engineering duct. They do just that, all while Freeman says she doesn't need to check in. The bridge sees two escape pods have been launched. This is what being hands-off means? No way. In sick bay, Kayshan should be okay in an hour. Miglimo, stay away, no puppet. Mariner and company are back, relaxing in the bar, having street corn. Jet, welcome to the circle of friends. Hey, it's Boimler. Welcome back. And, Jet steps away like a gentleman. Boimler's seen action with darkly complex characters thrown into battles that end in twists. It sounds familiar. But he's back, and he's glad to be here. And Kayshan really is okay to end the episode.
Red alert. All hands stand to battle stations.
With that incoming threat analysis, Pete, let's talk about the evils of Chairman Siggy.
This trope of collectors backstabbing and looting other collectors was a good one, albeit, you know, not one you could fill an entire episode with, hence the split story.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that we kind of have, we have an A and a B and a Diet B story, or Junior C, whatever you want to call it, in terms of obviously Mariner and company being, in my mind, the A story, the Titan story being the B story, and then Freeman there kind of obviously connected to the Mariner story. But we touched on a lot of different storylines in a 25-minute episode. And Chairman Siggy certainly playing his part. A little casual racism there. Hey, looking at you, Orion. As well as, of course, you know, the finger what points to someone else has three fingers pointing back to himself.
Yeah, trying to steal Kayless's fornication helmet. Not exactly sure where he was hiding it.
We also have not only the return of Pakalids as baddies, but I think... my expectation had been, all right, we're going to have, you know, the Titan and Boimler for a couple of episodes, 2-3 episodes, and then probably wrap that up so that our foursome can come back together. I was not expecting, hey, says Riker to the audience, essentially, don't forget that the Pakalids can't be doing this just by themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, this notion that, yes, the Pakalids are a threat and a considerable threat, but that we're working on a storyline there, too.
Yeah, and not getting an answer in this episode who it was who is potentially supporting them. So that other player, if there is another player yet to be revealed.
Next on the list, Pete, is Kerner Howes. Now, listen, let's not make the same mistake that Commander Jack Ransom did. Let's keep in mind, Kerner Howes, not the same as TNG's Kivas Fajo. Okay, both collectors, but not the same guy.
Yeah, like I said before, this trope that there are many of them, and Dr. Miglimo pointing out they have all tried to collect data, and Data just wanted to feel. Yeah, it's cute, but like I said, it's just not enough for an entire episode, hence the need to have the Pakalids be an ongoing threat with the Titan.
I will say, too, the list on Memory Alpha of the items that Kerner Howes collected, it certainly is way more than my eyes caught on my multiple views. I must confess, I did not press pause in every single scene. So I guess on the one hand, I give the show credit for, oh, I don't know, having a poker visor and the Trident scanner. I think I did see the Trident scanner, actually. Things like that. Lower Decks oftentimes has this tension where it's like, if you slow down a little bit, does that undercut the comedy or the action comedy? Would I have minded to slow down a little bit, to take a little bit of a tour of these things? I wouldn't have minded, but not the choice made in this episode.
I have not looked at Memory Alpha, so it'll be interesting in our next segment what we both have and then what's different.
Well, Pete, without further ado, let's set our sensors to theories. Now, Pete, we'll get back to the props for a second. I do just want to ask this question. This week, we're podcasting an animated series that's part of a legacy IP. And this week's story involves a collector and voice actor Fred Tatasciore. What universe is this?
Two universes.
Yes, of course, the exact same question asked on our What If podcast yesterday. Fred Tatasciore appearing in definitely in this week's What If. I don't think Memory Alpha mentions whether he voiced any of the Pakalids this week. I know he did last week. I assume that's the case, since he does not have a regular character thus far. Although, Pete, I guess jumping off fully into theories here, will we see Fred Tatasciore get another quasi full-time character in these glorious 8 episodes that we have ahead of us?
I thought he was going to be playing the Temerian, Lieutenant Kayshon, so that he's not voicing the new security officer. That would have been a cute wrinkle, and then you could keep replacing him as the series wore on. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they keep him on there. Maybe it's the Pakalid gig for now.
So, question for you, Pete, is, when we talk about this episode, is, as an Engadget article claimed, is this week's Lower Decks comment about the disappointing nature of darkly complex characters thrown into battles that ends in twists, is that an indictment of the Kurtz Trek era, this no. episode produced by Alex Kurtzman?
No, it's not an indictment. And again, similarities being pointed out by characters in universe, you know, having some idea of self-deprecation, that's you know, just knowing yourself.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like it's, I feel like it's low-hanging fruit to say, oh, it's self-critique. I mean, you think back to, I mean, look, obviously Classic Trek has, let's say, the least modern feel, it being the least modern of the shows. That said, there are still episodes. I mean, you know, Pete, I keep returning to, you know, Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, which is not a great watch, but, you know, it's the black on one side and white on the other. The commentary is through the roof. The ending, which is, and their world is destroyed, and the two of them will just fight in the fires. They're consumed by hate. No Star Trek answer here. Guess these guys destroyed themselves. Hey, you all at home can do that too, or you can wisen up. You know, it's a super powerful episode there, and it is also one that involves darkly complex characters. Maybe they're not super complex, but they're thrown to a battle with an end twist, which is there, you know, there is no happy ending. This is part of Star Trek 2, T-O-O. Not all the time, but it's part of it.
I just don't feel like using my neutral zone incursion credit this week.
Last question from me. Will we conclude next week's episode, right? Episode 203. That's going to be roughly the one-third mark of the season. We obviously have everything back as it should be, the four lower deckers together. Are we starting to see a more contrite Mariner starting to grow as a person and so forth?
I don't think so. And I think throwing Jet into the mix this week was a little bit more of an ulterior motive.
Tell me more. I'm interested. I know there's a lot of Jet fans out there.
Yeah. So the sonic showers, and let's talk about that for a second, is it a function of the device that we couldn't see anything, or was that the show editing itself?
I think yes to both. I think it's a handy way. I'm in popular fiction. I'm not aware of communal co-ed showers outside of Starship Troopers.
I was just going to say Starship Troopers.
It was a real interesting...
These are Starship Troopers, though.
Well, yeah, that's just it. I think that... I also think in pop culture, it's not exactly a shower, but I think of, you know, the famous for a time co-ed bathroom in Ally McBeal. I must confess, Pete, a show I didn't really watch much of, but everybody knew about the co-ed bathroom scenes and the opportunities for people to be running into each other, you know, obviously after dispensing with the necessities and having, you know, conversation, blah, blah, blah. So I think it makes sense in an enlightened future where part of the conceit of this series has been, hey, these lower deckers really do have an incentive to move on up because they got bunk beds and communal showers and, you know, blah, blah, blah. To me, it all works. It's all a reminder of, you know, you're at the lowest rung of Starfleet and all of that. They're enlightened enough to not be offended by, you know, nudity of whatever gender might appear before them, so on and so forth. And you get to have essentially a big naked scene, but also be like, it's just hey Paramount Plus, the same outlines of characters that we use for the uniforms, it's the exact same outline, it's just skin colored and blurry. Boom.
I think they're backing into it. I think you get the nudity out of the way first, the pseudo-sexual situation, and then you continue to have the tension between Mariner and Jet.
I would agree with that, and I mean, obviously there's a, through the course of the first season, the show has gotten a considerable supporting C-level kind of, you know, the Jets of the world and so forth, where you have the voice actor already figured out, you have the animation already figured out, so it's a little bit easier to pull them up from the lowest rung of animation stardom, for lack of a better word, and bring them back. And I think it just makes everything feel more cohesive. I think, Pete, of the multiple times on TNG where they kind of tried to do that and for whatever reason it didn't work, the ensign that spills the hot chocolate or the coffee on on Picard, you know, was meant to be more and blah, blah, blah. Things like that where you can get it, it's easier to execute here in animation.
The stuff in the collection, Matt, let's delve into that. First thing I saw there was the game from The Next Generation.
Yes, I think I had initially thought that was a Bizarin breather, and then I
did initially as well, yes.
Okay, that makes me feel better. yeah, saw that on a dummy. I'm trying to think. I believe I saw there was a flag. What was it? A Mirror Universe flag? It's funny.
There's a Terran Empire design. I thought initially it might be a pin. It seems like it's some sort of banner.
I definitely, it was weird kind of watching it. I was like, I'm not going to pause because I know you're Easter egging me, which maybe was just me being a little bit not excessively grumpy. There's nothing to be grumpy about in this episode. Maybe it's just me being a little like, I know that you're trying to get me to pause. I'm not going to pause. And Pete, maybe I'm the one who paid the price there.
Got me to pause. There's the guy's head in the silver wall. I can't remember if that was a Next Generation or a Voyager situation.
That was the Haven gift box from the first season of TNG.
Yes,
the face played
yes.
by Armin Shimmerman.
Yes. Yes.
In fact, it was his first. It's weird. I randomly wandered across the Haven entry on Memory Alpha yesterday. I believe that was Armin Shimmerman's first produced appearance in Star Trek, because Haven, though it was a mid-season episode, was like the third shot, so they got him for Haven, and then they're like, hey, you do makeup good. Want to play Ferengi number two? And, you know, the rest is history.
There's a baseball and a bat. Obvious connection there to Deep Space Nine.
Absolutely.
The salt vampire from the original series seems to be stuffed.
Which makes sense. Its second appearance in TOS was as a stuffed decoration.
There's a trombone, which seems a little over the top in an episode that features Riker again.
I would agree. I wonder how much of this, you know, how much of this is we need to dress the scene. Scene right. Dressing is not go to prop department. It's, you know, go draw and maybe. I don't know how an animation workflow for an episode exists. I would imagine probably you say, hey, Pete, you and your crew, focus on the Mariner pages. Hey, Matt, you and your crew, focus on the Riker pages, because there needs to be cohesion. You know, the two stories really don't cross. It needs to be cohesion from the one to the other. And Pete and his crew are going to be, you know, oh, I always loved that episode with the Hotel Royale. Let's get a copy of the Hotel Royale paper book somewhere in there, which I'm looking at the list. Apparently it's there. I'm going to have to go back and find that, because that is I was going to say guilty pleasure. That is just one of my favorite episodes of TNG, period.
There's a Greek statue, obvious reference there again to the original series.
Yeah, I know I saw the Lurpa, the Vulcan weapon.
Yes. So I have that as Vulcan axe on my notes. Maybe my favorite was Khan's necklace on a faceless mannequin.
Well, it's got to be faceless, right? You need to bring focus to the necklace itself and not to the wearer.
There is strangely a stand-up arcade game. No name visible, but maybe just, hey, we got stuff from the 1980s in here too.
Yeah, I think things like that, they're smart additions. I mean, obviously, it's a scene that is asking for Star Trek Easter eggs. Fine, so be it. But if you then want to expand it just a little bit more, you know, I think back to that TNG episode, there was a, you know, you had a baseball card, you had, was it a Monet painting? No, Mona Lisa. So yeah, to kind of just build the world out a little bit more so it's not just Star Trek.
maybe the most terrifying thing in the collection is, or at least for Matt, is a shark.
I did see the shark, and I quickly turned away and said no. Although I guess the good news is it's stuffed. Who knows, Pete? Maybe the collector, Kerner Howes, was a fan of Jaws. Maybe that is the Bruce the Shark.
In addition to the, what you call the LARPA, the Vulcan axe, there's also the Vulcan chime thing that they jingle during the Amok Time episode.
There you go. Certainly a deep bench shown here.
Chateau Picard cases.
I did see that one.
The Abe Lincoln skeleton in the skeleton room.
Yes. Oh, yeah. With the Excalibur.
And then the giant science uniform Starfleet skeleton. I'm not quite sure what was up with that.
I was a little confused by that because it made me think of the giant Spock animated episode. But of course, that's not giant Spock. I mean, maybe that's... Pete, maybe right now somebody's listening going, don't you remember in that TAF's episode how there was also Officer Smith that got bigified or whatever? If that's the case, I don't remember it. Maybe the show is splitting the difference a little bit. Like, it's not actually... It's a reference to that, but it's like... We're imagining, because not for nothing, what's the story purpose of the giant skeleton? It lands unambiguously on Siggy, killing him unambiguously. So maybe it's like, the starting point was the giant Spock in the first animated Star Trek, and we're going to reference that, maybe not literally, because, spoiler alert, Spock lived before going on to die two more times. So that was kind of the connection I made there.
My biggest issue with this episode springs from my excitement for it, that we would get the first Temerian in Starfleet in Lieutenant Kayshan. And all right, I get it. There's, you know, the memorable lines that this species has spoken before, a number of which they touch on and now get used within the episode by other characters. And he really only speaks two that we haven't heard, and we lack the context clues, which, you know, Mariner points out. So that all tracks. But I think you lose the comedic value by, oh, and he uses a universal translator. Oh, but it doesn't always catch the things. And then I think, too, they've also painted themselves into a corner in terms of story. So the first Temerian ever in Starfleet would be stationed on the Cerritos?
Well, a couple of thoughts there. If he's not a great officer yet, because I have high hopes for Kayshan, but if he's not a great officer yet, which we kind of see he's not, there are still some communication issues. Yes, it's played for somewhat comedic effect, but he's the one not speaking Federation standard properly, right? So if you sit and go, okay, he's earned the lieutenant pip, but he's not, you know, kind of, we're not ready to hand him a starship Kirk style quite yet. You know, the Cerritos being a secondary level posting, he's a lieutenant. He's head of security on a smaller ship that has less security things. He's still working his way up. I feel like there's no shame being security officer on the Cerritos. It's also not, you know, chief of security on the flagship, but I think it's fitting with the imperfect kind of officers that we see coming through the Cerritos level of career, you know. I think back to last season, how a bunch of those captains of the sister ships of the Cerritos, how multiple of those ships and multiple of those captains were killed off. When you're here, you're still working your way up. Maybe you're not forever stuck there. Maybe you can work your way to a top ship.
And then that he gets turned into a puppet, something that now has become a motif with Lower Decks. We had the stuffed animal with the Geordi visor, and now we've had Lieutenant Kayshon turned into this stuffed animal puppet thing.
Pete, maybe that's the most Jean's Trek thing, in that not only was Jean's Trek aspiring to a better world, one of peace and understanding and freedom from money, but also a world where Jean wants a necklace made that he can sell. So put Spock in an Idik, and we're going to go sell the crap out of that necklace, because merchandising. Whether it was a note passed down or whether it was a smart Mike McMahon who said, you know, we're going to get a little merchandising opportunity here, so be it. By the way, Pete, just to circle back to the giant skeleton for a second, TAS episode, The Infinite Vulcan, the giant Spock there, I had misremembered it as Spock himself being blown up. No, it was a giant clone of Spock created by Stavros Kenzilius, known colloquially as Spock 2. So this is the final resting point of Spock 2, the giant clone of our The Spock.
Deep cut, indeed. Rutherford may have had it, but I don't think anybody else had Boimler coming back to the Cerritos as a transporter distortion field clone.
I like the story solution. I really, really do. And the fact that they completely lean into it and go, oh, we are cribbing from Riker. And in the
with
world
Riker.
Of, with Riker, yeah. And frankly, in the world of life in Starfleet, you know, we know these crazy things happen. Right. So it's the fact that they're surprised, but not like that surprised, like, oh, like it's a once in a generation thing where a transporter clone gets happens to a member of Starfleet and the Starfleet has to deal with it. Okay. Like it's weird, but it's not that weird. Pete, I know I use the phrase have their cake and eat it too, but this is how you can say Boimler really earned that promotion. And we also have a show called Star Trek Lower Decks that takes place on the Cerritos, and Boimler is supposed to be there. My only quibble, and I will completely bow to, you know, because story, what did Brad Boimler, as opposed to the new William Boimler, what did Brad Boimler
do? Billy Boimler.
Billy Boimler, there you go, Billy B. What did Brad Boimler do to deserve a demotion? I mean, I get, fine, the solution is...
No, he's been cloned. We don't know which is the prime, because they were both Brad. Yes, the one that stays with Riker, who remains the one who's been promoted, goes now by William. So we have Bradward back on the Cerritos. So I guess he's our original, but because there's two and life experience, well, one goes back to Ensign and naturally goes back to the Cerritos.
But what did the one that went back to the Cerritos, what did he do to earn a demotion?
He wasn't demoted. He's the clone. He starts from nothing.
But he had the same... He's the same guy who, if he's a clone, he's the same guy that got... And again, this is all under, like, I get it.
They kept the more experienced one on the Titan.
But weren't they both equally cloned?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, you know, unlike Lieutenant Riker, who was on the planet for 7 or 8 years or whatever, like, this is a guy who all he missed, or I guess we don't know whether this is the one that beamed up or shuttled, then beamed up. But my point being, they both had the same source of getting the promotion. And again, it's completely under, like I've said, I understand they want to do a bit of a story reset, and that's fine. But I feel bad for Brad.
I think it's rife with comedic opportunity too. I think you're going to continue to see that. I mean, it won't be a week to week thing, I think, with the Titan the way it had been before this accident. But now that you could flip back to the Titan and Billy Boimler is doing whatever, and the difference in the personality begins to manifest or emerge, as opposed to the character we know as Bradward back on the old Cerritos.
Just keep Billy Boimler away from the Defiant. That's all I ask. With that, let's open Hailing Frequencies.
Hailing Frequencies open, sir.
Checking out that Twitter poll, as we always do. Pete, listen, I tried to trick the haters out there. I didn't think it didn't quite work. I think maybe for Star Trek, I need to retire the 4-3-2-1, much as I did, at least for this 1 week, didn't do a 4-3-2-1 for What If. But here were the choices, Pete. Picard, because what I was trying to do was give equally ambiguous Temerian-sounding things, but it didn't quite work. Anyhow, Picard and Dathan at El Agra, one check, got 31.3%. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra, two checks, got 19%. Temba's Arms Wide Open, three checks, got 6.3%. And The Wall, a door, which is one I made up, four checks, got 43.8%. Pete, I don't know what to conclude from that at all. How about it was a silly poll for an episode that was a lot of fun? We heard from What Of It, that's at KCLYLE1 on Twitter. This show is a love letter to Trek fans, especially TNG. What other Shined Jin got to refer to Riker's clone, DS9, then use it to solve a problem. Boimler wanted to be in both ships. Love it. I'm not quite sure what a Shined Jin is, but Pete, it sounds good.
I don't know.
We heard from Spider-Ham Lincoln, that's at TessLC139, who says as follows, some of the best things about Lower Decks are the homages to Trek past. Sometimes it's a plot-centric tribute, sometimes it's a subtle background image, and sometimes it's a passing reference in dialogue. Simply put, LD is Temba, his arms wide open. We heard from Jackie Wolf, that's at Jackie Wolf on Twitter. Shaka when the walls fell, this was a great episode. I employed the pause button to find all sorts of treasures in the collector's ship. My fave was the Terran Empire wall hanging. Also glad to see that Riker finally got over his fear of Nightbird. And lastly, Pete, we hear from James the Sagacious, that's at Big Kiln on Twitter. One of the best episodes yet. I agree, James. Great way to bring our boy back. Interesting that the B plot was Captain Freeman's evaluation rants. Pete, he raises a good point there. Is it fair? Do you think it's fair that Freeman is being chided for being a micromanager?
No, I think that's a legitimate criticism. I think it's proof of a more evolved, civilized sensibility that you let go.
I guess, I don't know. I guess then Starfleet is micromanaging her, micromanaging or something like that. Bosses. Am I right? Bosses. And acting like real bosses, real cool folks, as the people go to patreon.com/fantasticgeek, making sure we have enough dilithium in the chamber to make go.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive content. You set the value of the podcast and the entertainment we provide. It takes just a dollar to get you there behind that door each month, and then you can choose from all sorts of levels. Can't contribute right now? Get yourself over to Apple Podcasts. This feed in particular, we need your ratings. We need your reviews. Be helping us out immensely there.
Apple Podcasts, it's arms open. And of course, Pete, we are so proud to remain listener-supported, whether it's with those reviews, with the clicks on over to patreon.com/fantasticgeek. But most importantly, Pete, it's about having that conversation. How can people be in touch with you on Twitter to talk about the future of Star Trek, maybe get some predictions in for Star Trek Day and so forth?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 12,073 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter looking back, Lost, do me in touch with the podcast, comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with a PH, all one word, like it today.
So for those listening just to the Lower Decks feed, we'll be back next Sunday to talk Star Trek. If you're listening on the Pop Culture Podcast feed in the next week, you got some Marvel in What If, you got some Star Wars in us talking about the Mandalorian behind the scenes, end of season 2 Disney Gallery thing, and of course more Star Trek. So Pete, I don't know that it gets any better than the holy triumvirate of Star Wars, Star Trek, and Marvel, but we have it all in the next week. For now though, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final word.
Zinda, his eyes red.
She never fails to take my breath away.
I wish I could kiss her and squeeze her.
Excuse me?